Okay, well, it is time for us to get started, so please find your seats. The title of this talk is Boys and Classical Christian Education. And let's pray, and then we'll begin. Father in heaven, we thank you for the time that you've blessed us with this afternoon. Thank you that we can sit and consider how to raise our sons and how to educate well the boys that are in our schools. Thank you for the blessing that they are. Pray that you would grant us wisdom, that you'd protect us from errors that lurk on either side. And we pray that you'd fill us with faith as we bring them up. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, again, the title of this talk is Boys and Classical Christian Education, and this is something that that I'm very interested in. I have a handful of boys at home. I have seven kids. Six of them are boys, and we have one little girl, and so we have a lot vested in this, and there's been a lot of conversation of late over boys in school and whether schools are designed in such a way that that is harmful to boys, or you know, maybe boys just aren't cut out for the classroom as we've envisioned it for years and years. And so these are the sorts of things that have prompted a lot of questions for me as an administrator and as a teacher and as a father, just wanting to know how to do well by our sons and how to do well for other people's sons at our school. And a lot of the, there's all sorts of gender panic going on, having to do with education specifically. And here are some of the things that you'll see thrown around. Boys get the majority of D's and F's in most schools. Boys make up 80% of our discipline problems. Of children with learning disabilities, 70% are boys. According to the Department of Education, boys are a year to a year and a half behind girls in reading and writing. Of high school dropouts, 80% are boys. In England, Canada, Australia, Germany, France, and Japan, indeed in 35 developed countries, girls outperformed boys in overall educational markers, and the most drastic difference being in reading and writing. Boys are six times more likely than girls to have a learning disability, three times more likely to be registered drug addicts, and four times more likely to be diagnosed as emotionally disturbed. They are at greater risk for schizophrenia, autism, sexual addiction, alcoholism, and all forms of antisocial and criminal behavior. They're 12 times more likely to murder someone, and their rate of death in car accidents is greater than girls by 50%. Men commit 90% of major crimes, 95% of burglaries, and they comprise 94% of drunk drivers. And so this is the sort of thing that really gets people bent out of shape or whipped up and excited about trying to fix this sort of thing. But I think for us, one of our questions should be why? Right, and it's tempting to start blaming, you know, all sorts of different things, but I think some of it's simply inherent. When you look at young men and young women and how they're made, how they've been created, boys naturally are risk takers. Right, boys naturally overestimate their abilities. Right, you've heard this before. I can do it. I can do it. Just stand back. I can do this. Right. And everyone around is thinking, there's no way. There's no way he can do that. Okay. And so some of the statistics here, for a lot of us who are familiar with kids, we should say, yeah, it makes sense. Right? Boys naturally have been created by God to initiate. They should be the ones that go out and take that risk and are willing to lead in some of these particular areas. And as we see our culture decline, it shouldn't surprise us that some of these negative examples of risk-taking and negative examples of taking initiative would fall on the young men and the men. And that's, in fact, what we see. There's a shrill opponent to this sort of thing, people that are still staunchly trying to maintain that really the crisis has to do with the young ladies and not the young men. And so they're citing things like this. More males than females attend Ivy League schools. And while we have been hearing that boys are virtually disappearing from college classrooms, among whites, the gender composition of colleges is pretty balanced, 51% female and 49% male. Overall, test scores on the SAT and ACT exams challenge the notion of a boys' crisis. Boys continue to hold an advantage, albeit small, on these undergraduate admissions tests. While the number of girls taking these exams has risen, so too has the number of boys. And so the debate rages on as to whether our schools are prejudiced against the girls or prejudiced against the boys, or whether the boys are not cut out for the classroom model that we have established and that we're used to. And so in all of this, I'd like to paint a short history of what I believe is a pendulum that we see swinging. And in education, you just have to get used to bandwagons going by, okay? And not just going by, but bandwagons going by and then coming back and going by. Okay? So that's what I think of as this pendulum idea, is there will be educational fads that swing past, and then a generation later, they'll swing by again as the new thing. Right, and it's the new thing that's going to solve all of our problems in school. And you see this in curriculum, you'll see this in the gender studies, you can see this in a whole host of different areas. And so for us as Christians, we need to have some kind of ballast in all of this. But just a quick picture of this whole thing. Pre-1960, most people, or almost everyone, was a gender absolutist, which means people knew that girls and boys were different. Right, and we didn't need a lot of scientific data to confirm that. People just knew that there's a difference between young men and young women, and that we should take that into account in our parenting and in our teaching. From 1960 to about the 1990s, we see a real strong attempt at gender relativism, where people were telling us that there's not an inherent difference in young men and young women. Instead, it has to do with the nature, the environment that you put them in. And so there's a strong drive to create, especially in daycares, a situation in which there are a number of daycares that all of the pictures on the walls were women or girls, and all the toys to play with were dolls and tea sets. And so you take the dolls and give it to the boys, and then you have to have somebody watching the boys to make sure they play the right way with the dolls, right? If an arm comes off and he uses it as a machine gun, then you've got to go scold him and put it back on and show him how to cuddle with that thing. But it was a real effort to try to show and validate the idea that young men and young women turn out the way they do because of how they're raised, because of how they're treated. And that if we could only treat them in a certain way, we'd see all sorts of gender reversals. Wouldn't that be glorious if that started happening? And so we're really pushing for that sort of a thing. And then within this century is when we've seen more of going back to gender absolutists. Okay, there have been a number of brain researchers who have conducted studies and have found, lo and behold, that boys and girls actually are different. Okay, which again, we see this fad swing by. And so their findings are these sorts of things. Girls hear better than boys. Girls are more easily distracted by background noise. Girls are more interested in the human face. Girls draw pictures of people, pets, houses. They're more emotional and more collaborative. They underestimate their abilities oftentimes. Boys are more interested in moving objects, prefer different colors than girls, draw pictures of rockets, car crashes, warfare, and overestimate their abilities. And again, you know, we've seen this. If you've worked with children, this shouldn't surprise us at all. You know, the latest the latest brain research tells us these sorts of things. But we, you know, we see this every day. In the school where I work, in the auditorium, there's artwork from all the students up on the walls. And I can remember just this past year, my son Miles was in third grade. Third graders all did a still life of these sunflowers. And so, you know, 20 sunflowers on the wall. So I was looking, oh, this is very nice, nice sunflower. They really were great. And I got to Miles's, and I thought, it was decent. And I looked at it, and there was something on the stalk. There was some little teeny things on the stalk, and I thought, aphids? And I looked at it, and there were soldiers in 30 or 40 of these little minuscule soldiers climbing their way up the stalk of this flower, and then the ones that had made it to the petals were shooting people. People were dying, and aphid soldiers on the ground below the grass. And I thought, great, the principal's son. You know, the one drawing with all the dead people in warfare on it. For us, right, as Christians, we need to know what to do about all of this stuff. And if things are going great at your school and you're really pleased with how it's all coming together and you're thankful for what's going on, you still need to have answers, because people will ask you questions. Why don't you have the boys and the girls segregated? Right? I mean, that's the thing nowadays. Why is it that you have your boys and your girls in the same classroom? And so even if you love what's going on right now, you need to have an answer for that sort of thing. You need to have thought through it and considered it, and what are the advantages and disadvantages, and be able to give a good answer. And I believe in some of these things, the best argument is thankfulness, right? And there are many times when people, they'll confuse pride for thankfulness. Okay, you know, we had somebody this past year talk to someone who works at the school and said, you know, the problem with Logos is they just think they know everything, and they're not open to new ideas, and you think you've got it all figured out and all this other stuff. And I think on this gender issue, they were mistaking what, for us, we love having boys and girls in the same school. I love it that my sons and my daughter get to go to the same school, get to eat lunch together, and get to play on the playground together. And so I'm thankful for the situation we have, but you have to be able to tell people, that's a really good question. This is something we've thought about. Even at the board level, we've considered the advantages and disadvantages, and this is why we're doing what we're doing. This is the sort of thing, you know, just another example. If you have boys and girls in the same classroom, you as a teacher need to be aware that they are different. And so every year in sixth grade, we take a bike trip at it's the last Friday of the school year, and we go up to a beautiful part of the country up north and ride our bikes along a trail, go to the lake and swim and fish and do a bunch of stuff. Well, what do you tell the boys at the beginning of the bike trip, and what do you tell the girls? Right? Well, it's not the same stuff, right? The boys, I say, stay on the trail. Stay with your chaperone. Don't jump off the bridge, right? Those are the important things for them, and they can keep track of that. And I'll say, girls, I need your attention. Ladies, make sure you speak kindly of one another and to one another. Make sure that you include girls that you don't normally include or don't normally have contact with. If there are girls in here that don't go to your church, sit with them at lunchtime, eat with them, include them. Talk to them the way you would want somebody else talking to you. And these are the temptations that they face. Are the girls trying to jump off the bridge? No. Are they trying to race ahead and lose their chaperone? No. They have different temptations. Is it helpful for both of them to receive those instructions in the context of each other? I think so. I'm really thankful that they can hear those different instructions to the different groups all together. Okay, so what We need ballast in this whole discussion. What do we want our sons to be like? And you can probably tell that when it comes to classroom education versus raising your kids, I don't have a really good dividing line between the two of them. Part of the reason is my kids are in my school and sometimes in my class, and when I'm at home, I feel like it's a class. You know, there's a classroom dynamic going on in my living room. So the divisions are not watertight by any stretch. The first thing that should grant us ballast as we think about what we want for our sons and for the young men in our schools are simply God's commands to them. Okay, God's commands to men in particular, and his directives to men. We should look at our young men and want to raise them so that they can be obedient to him. And so a number of things here will fall under that category. William Mauser and Doug Wilson have come up with some very helpful attributes that we should see in young men. And so I'm going to go through five of those. If you're familiar with these, this will be a review for you, but it was very helpful. I've read these things a number of times. I've gone through the five attributes of masculinity that they have outlined and tried to come up with practical examples of how to make those things come home. The first thing that these gentlemen have recommended is that you should raise your young men to be lords. And this idea comes from Genesis chapter 1, where God tells Adam to fill and subdue the earth. So the idea is exercising dominion. So when you think about your sons, you want them, in a certain sense, to be lords. And this means exercising dominion. Attributes of this are you want them to be adventurous and you want them to be visionary. Adventurous and visionary. In order to accomplish this, in order for you to teach this, they've got to have some freedom to explore, right? To adventure. And so things that I recommend, raising sons, I think one really crucial element is, you know, some dads are having a hard time. I can't get my son to be tough. I'm trying to make him tough, and the more I try to make him tough, the wimpier he seems. Right? Have you ever heard that or experienced that before? You know, we get down on the floor and I start wrestling with him, and then pretty soon he's crying and he never wants to wrestle again. That's kind of the short story of it. Every time dad takes him out to do a manly thing, he spoils it and the son doesn't want to do that thing anymore. Well, as a father, you've got to be really good at reading your kids and realizing where is that dividing line. There's this magic line for kids where you're down on the floor and you're wrestling, and he's not terrified yet, but he's almost terrified, right? And sometimes you just have to learn. As a young dad, you know, you've messed it up so many times that you think, okay, I'm approaching this line. I know that I'm almost there. And if I knock him around a little bit more, he's going to curl up and cry and not want to play anymore. But you've got to find this line of how much is too much, and it needs to be a little bit past what's comfortable for him. A little bit uncomfortable, and then lots of fun. He needs to experience, oh, this is a little scary, and then that was great. And that's like taking a step. Okay, you're one step up. And then you want to do that a number of times so that he can really wrestle with you and enjoy it and realize that he doesn't need to be intimidated. But there are all sorts of little things like this in life where you want to establish this idea of lordship or being brave, but some dads are too clumsy at it. Right? They're not reading him. They're just thinking about how much fun they're having or something, and then they've squashed him before they've made any progress. And so you want to read your son. Watch his face. Right? Learn from the sounds that he makes. You need to understand, what's he thinking? Is this too much? Am I a little uncomfortable? And then how do I make this delightful and fun? Other things that can be really helpful, I think Doug Wilson calls this the tree fort impetus, right? This whole lordship idea. You want to go out and explore and build a fort. Well, there are some kids that go out and try to build, and they have no, you know, their dad's not involved, and they can't build anything. Everything falls over, and the fort is a real dud. There are other kids who the dad hires the contractor. You know, I remember I had a friend like this where there were two forts in the front yard, and they each had these brick foundations that were, I don't know, 2 or 3 feet square going up, and then this alien pod thing that came out from the sides. And then, you know, some contractor came out and put a foundation in, built the whole thing, and then running water and electricity in there. And then you say, all right, have fun, go play. And those can be some of the worst forts, right? They're no fun. So as parents, you've got to think through, how can I give my son some tools and give him some ideas without cramping his style? You know, this is another temptation for dads, is you give him a tool and you say, all right, now here's how you need to do it. And then you stand there. And you watch, right? Why? To tell him that he's not doing it right. And so he's using the tool, and what's he thinking about? Dad's watching me. Dad's watching me the whole time. He's going to see that I'm not doing it right. He's not thinking about the job that he's doing. He's thinking about the critique that's going to come pretty soon. You, as fathers, need to give some instruction, give some tools. Here's an idea. Try this. Go get him. Have a good time. And then walk away and let him create. And then when you check back in 15 minutes, it should be like this. Hey, look at this. What's going on? This looks great. And be really encouraging. And then maybe in that context, hey, here's another idea if you want to try it. Okay? And give him another tool or give him another idea. But he needs to have this idea of being adventuresome, right? I can do this. I can build this fort or whatever it is that he's working on. But don't hover and critique. And inside, right, dad's thinking, look, I know how to do this. I know how to paint this fort, and the strokes need to all go this way, and you can't have drips coming down. But he needs to learn that. There's some of these lessons that a young person just needs to learn by adventuring out and making some mistakes and realize there's not a lot at stake here. It's just a tree fort, or it's just a little fort out in the woods. So that's the first thing, is you want your sons to be lords. Second thing is you want your sons to be husbandmen. This comes from Genesis 2. It has to do with tending and keeping the garden. Tending and keeping the garden. The attributes, goals that we want to see in our sons, you want them to be patient, careful, and hardworking. Patient, careful, and hardworking. In order for them to learn this, they must have something to tend, or they must have something to keep. And one natural connection in the classroom is their desk. Right? I used to talk to my third graders about the fact that in Logos School, their home, their house, was that desk. And if they couldn't keep this desk, you know, it's this wide and only this tall, if they couldn't keep that thing clean, they were crazy if they'd think they'd be able to manage a household someday. I'd say, look, this is a little teeny picture of you as a father of your household. Look how small your household is. Open the top, you can see everything that's inside there. It's neat and clean. You need to be able to tend and keep this little metal box day in and day out. And this sort of skill, you know, it seems so trivial. This sort of skill is just a baby step to being a husbandman over things that are more intricate and larger. And so these little sorts of lessons are important. Keeping a bedroom clean, same sort of thing, right? If you have sons, it needs to be dad who holds them accountable for whether their rooms are clean or not, and whether they've put things away or haven't put things away. Other ideas for developing these attributes in your kids, things like summer jobs. Once your kids are old enough, my oldest two sons are working the summer full time. There is nothing so valuable for those young people as working for someone else. Right, going and working for an employer who's going to evaluate their job, cut them a paycheck at the end of the day, and they can see the benefit of the work that they've done. Other things that are really good for younger kids are wild animals. Let your kids catch wild animals. Be careful at public parks. My son Jed just has a gift for catching wildlife. And when we go to a public park, we always have to talk and say, look, you can't chase the geese around. Don't try to catch animals because there are people here that will not be pleased by what's going on. But at home, we catch the wild animals, right? But we have a rule. If you catch a snake, it's 2 days. It's always a 2-day limit. You bring a snake in, because they want to keep them forever and ever, right? But you just need to have a policy as a family. Our policy is 2 days. You keep that thing for 2 days, set it free. Just this past week, Jed brought home a turtle, and it was about the size of a silver dollar. Little teeny turtle caught from Hordman Pond on his way home from the gym. Brought this little turtle home. We kept him for more than 2 days because we liked him so much. But then we let him go. And this is simply an example of kids learning to take care of things, having a pet, right? You take care of your pet, make sure you feed him, make sure that the area is clean, and it gives them an opportunity to learn to be a husbandman. All right, so we have lords, husbandmen. Number three is saviors. You want your boys to grow up and be saviors. This comes from Genesis chapter 3. You want your sons to understand the fact that the serpent will bruise their heel, but they will bruise his head. We see this in Christ, but you want your sons to be imitating Christ in this way. So they're dragon slayers. Attributes that we want to see in them, we want to see them strong, sacrificial, courageous, and good. Strong, sacrificial, courageous, and good. This means that they must rescue, protect, crush, kill, conquer, win. These are all the sorts of things that boys want to do, right? When you tell them, this is the sort of young person that I want you to be, they get very, very excited. And so you need to guide them so that they see the right context. Time and place makes a big deal. In order to do this, they must not be a wuss, and they must not be bad, right? In order to do this effectively, you can't. If your son is a wimp, he'll be a terrible savior. And if he's bad, he'll be saving the wrong person. Okay, it's really important. You do want him to be courageous. You do want him to be tough, and he needs to be clear thinking to know who he should be rescuing in which situation. Examples of things, areas where you can teach your kids in these things. Number one is when you send them to school, they should go to school with a clear idea of how to protect their sister. Right? One of the most delightful things for us was to prep our boys when Bea went into preschool in how to look out for her during recess, to check in with her during every recess and just ask her how she's doing and make sure she's doing all right, and what sort of protection they should provide during recess, before and after school. And Bea had when she was in first grade just this past year, there was a young man in her class that made a comment to somebody that he wanted to marry her someday, and she'd be his wife, right, this little first grade boy. And I found out about it. And and at lunchtime the next day, I just went and sat down next to him at lunch, and I said, I heard that you've been talking about marrying Bea. And he looked at me and smiled and nodded. I don't think he said anything. Nodded, and I said, I've told my sons to protect Bea from people like you. And I said, you're in first grade. You shouldn't be talking about marrying anybody, but especially not my daughter. And in some ways, it's this sweet little thing, and he just needed to have some things clarified for him. But they need to know that she has six brothers at home, that they don't want anybody walking around saying, I'm going to marry Bea, or I think she's cute, or anything like that. There's a time and a place for that. It's not anywhere near where he was. And that's all that I needed to say. Everything was good after that. Another example here, Jed, we were in California a couple weeks ago, and at my parents' place, and they have ground squirrels. They have a couple hundred acres of land in the foothills, and so my dad has this board with all the grandkids' names on it, and then every time you shoot a ground squirrel, he puts a check by your name. And so Jed was pretty excited. He wanted to, he's really competitive, wanted to have the most checks, and spent hours walking around through the dry grass. And one afternoon he came back, and he was just shaking. And he said, Pop, I shot a snake. And we always talk about killing rattlesnakes because there are rattlesnakes on the property. So everybody, you know, runs down with Jed, and Jed had a pretty big rattlesnake come by about 5 feet away and shot its head right off with his rifle. And it was a wonderful opportunity. We brought it back. He skinned it out, put it on the board, and we did the glycerin and everything. It was a wonderful opportunity to sit down and say, you know what, this is just a little picture of Christ, right, bruising the serpent's head. This is the sort of thing I want you to grow up and be able to do faithfully at the right time. And he just smiled, and it kind of clicks in. But it's the sort of thing that I think Jed grew up 2 or 3 years that afternoon, right? Just shot that rattlesnake, and he was glowing for days and days because it was a benchmark for him. And in our family, I have 3 or 4 rattlesnake stories that I always tell, and now Jed has a rattlesnake story, right? He's got his dragon slayer story that he can tell, and he's the only one. So he has this big red dot after his name. It's not a check mark. It's a red dot for rattlesnakes. So you want to teach your sons to be lords, husbandmen, saviors, and fourth thing is sages. Sages. This comes from Proverbs. Throughout the book of Proverbs, young men in particular are commanded to seek and search after, cry out for wisdom. This means that attributes they should have, they should be teachable, studious, thoughtful, wise. Teachable, studious, thoughtful, wise. This means that they should be into school. Right? They should be into school, into studying, into doing their homework, into reading their Bibles. They must be all about the book of Proverbs, and they need to be prepared by their father. Seeking and searching, running after wisdom, and staying away from the adulteress. And I can think of no better book of the Bible to go through with your sons over and over again, but especially kind of those 2 or 3 years before puberty, than Proverbs. And talking about the fact that they should be seeking after a woman and defining who she is. And it is Lady Wisdom. So they should be sages. Number of things here. One of them is they need to be money smart as well. They need to know how to manage finances. From a young age, they should have a really clear understanding of what you do with money when you get it, because that's going to translate into what they do with money when they get it when they're older. And so, you know, working full-time, when a paycheck comes in, 10% goes to tithe, goes to a whiskey bottle in the boys' room, put your tithe in the whiskey bottle, and then it's empty. And we and then you empty it out Sunday morning to tithe. 10% goes in a little lockable chest underneath my bed. That's for savings. 10% goes to savings. And then 80%, they can spend wisely, which doesn't mean they can buy anything that they want. Our rule is you have 2-week waiting period. So if you want to buy something significant, and our family significant is, you know, $10 or more. If you want to buy something significant, you come and talk to Dad about it. Say, Dad, you know, Josiah wanted to buy a shotgun a couple years ago. Really like to buy a shotgun. I said, all right, well, give it 2 weeks. I'll think about it. You think about it. We'll see if you still want to buy it. And 80% of the time with my sons, after about 1 week, they've changed their mind. They want to buy something else. And then we would say, all right, well, 2 weeks. After a week, they've changed their mind. But it's this, I don't know if it's just young men, but it's the idea of money burning a hole in your pocket. You know, you've got a couple $100, and you could really buy something substantial. And so you just want to buy something substantial. And then you buy it, and then you think, oh, well, that was kind of neat. But being patient is something that they need to learn, being wise with their finances. This is something that my wife is really good at, and I've got the money burning hole in my pocket issue. You know, my wife will take She'll take 2 weeks just researching, right? She'll go shopping for something, go to a couple different stores, and not purchase anything. And I don't think that way. If I go out shopping, I want to buy something, and I want to bring it home and do the next thing after that. Well, she's patient, and she's shrewd, and this is the sort of thing that I want to see in my sons as well. So, sages. All right, fifth thing is glory bearers. This is the last of the five. You want your sons to be glory bearers. And this comes from 1 Corinthians 11:7. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God, but woman is the glory of man. Attributes that we want to see in our sons as glory bearers, number one is that they're representative. Two, that they're responsible. Three, that they're holy. So representative, responsible, and holy. This means, number one, that they represent Christ. And your children need to know that when they live their life in this world, they're an example of what Christ is like. This is a good application for the classroom as well. If you take your kids on a field trip, they leave the school building, I'll teach them that they're walking with, what are those things, sandwich boards that have the advertisements on them? So if you're walking with a sign on the front of you, and it says, this is what Christ is like, this is what Logos is like, and this is what a witling is like, right? To the world, they're advertising, this is what a Christian does, this is what a Christian says, this is the kind of music a Christian listens to, this is what kind of movies that a Christian goes to, this is how a Christian plays basketball. It's all these different scenarios in life. You're representing their ambassadors for Christ. And so on top of that billboard is, this is what Christ is like. Second thing is they represent the school. If they're on a field trip, they're representing, this is what a Logos student is like. This is how they dress, this is how they behave. And then as well, they're representing their family. Even a child is known by his actions, by whether his conduct is pure and right. So when your kids go out, they're representing what kind of family you have. And they need to understand that they are representative. So teach them to see themselves as ambassadors of Christ, their school, and their family. The thing that brought this home, as far as being responsible for me, when I was in junior high school, I had a good friend named Brett Taylor, who we played basketball together and did a bunch of stuff. We went up to his father's cabin 1 year, and his father went out deer hunting. It was really cold, and so we stayed in the cabin, and we played football inside this teeny little cabin, and which was dumb, but it was adventurous. And I remember one time I threw the ball to Brett, and Brett was running through this. It was just a one room, had a little bathroom out to the side. It was a shack. Brett kind of made a cut. I threw out in front of him for him to run and catch, and the ball went right through the glass window. Okay, broke the window. And I was trying to figure out how to cover, how are we going to hide this window in this teeny little shack? And I think there were two windows or three windows, the odds were not very good. And as soon as Brett's dad walked in the shack after hunting, Brett stood up, walked over to him, and said, "Dad, I broke the window. I'm sorry, and I'm prepared to pay for it." And I just stood there. I had thrown the football, and I was still trying to figure out how we were going to get out of this. what are we going to do? And when Brett walked up and said that to his father, it really caught me off guard. But it was a prime example of a young man taking responsibility and owning it. And so you want to instill that sort of thing in your sons and in the young men at your school. And so how do you do that? Because they're not naturally, it just doesn't naturally happen. You can't hope that it will happen and then have that be effective necessarily. So you've got to teach your kids. You've got to tell them stories, right? So I've told our whole elementary about Brett Taylor a number of times. Tell the boys about accepting responsibility in particular. And so at home, you've got to talk to them about that. But then little things will come up where your kids will be at a friend's house and break a toy. You know, a toy is broken. Well, here's a side thing. If you go to people's house and they have young kids. The kids are going to play together with toys, right? And one thing your kids need to know is that we don't bring toys home from other people's houses. Because kids will try to be really hospitable and offer things. Sometimes your kids will ask for things. You know, can I want this toy? Can I have this toy? Well, they just need to know that we don't take any of their toys home, and it doesn't matter how nice they're trying to be. You just say, I'm sorry, my dad wouldn't let me take it home. Thank you, though. You give it back to him. But your son goes to somebody's house, breaks a toy while you're over there fellowshipping with the parents, and you've got to know how are you going to deal with that? Well, the really nice thing about the fact that his savings is in that box underneath my bed is that he has cash on hand. And so if he breaks something, that's a time where you can say, okay, well, you know what? It looks like it was an accident to me, but this is a good opportunity for us to take responsibility for what we've done. So what I'd like you to do is go to the father of the house, go tell him, I'm really sorry I broke this toy. I'd like to buy a new one. And then I'll take you out, and we'll go to Walmart or wherever it is, and we'll use your own money from savings, and we'll buy that new one. And they learn inch by inch that's how you deal with things when they break. And they've got some way to pay for it. Because if mom and dad are the only ones who have any money, then they don't learn that there's a financial implication to how you handle other people's things. So they've got it, you know, even if it's just a little bit of money that they're saving up, it's very important for them to have some money in savings just in case things like this happen, because they do. All right, so that's the first thing is kind of the first set of things is you want to prepare your sons, prepare the boys in your class to obey the commands that God has given. And we have these five, and I'm sure there are more, but these five are handy. And they're something to hang your hat on. The second thing is this, is we are all called in Ephesians 5 to be imitators of Christ. So really, you know, when we're trying to figure out what's a faithful young man look like, or what's a faithful teacher look like, or what's a faithful father look like, the answer to that question is imitate Christ, follow after Christ. And so when you think through what are the attributes of God, those are the same sort of attributes that you want for your sons, that you want for your children. And a lot of these things, if you've been thinking, you know, as I've gone through these lists, a lot of these things apply to girls as well. It's not strictly aimed at young men that have to do these particular things. There are a lot of commands of God, well, like this one that we're talking about. Jesus doesn't say, boys or men imitate me and women help him out. Okay, I mean, women are called to help, but women should be actively following after Christ just like men should. And so a lot of these attributes are the same for both. The difference you'll see is in the calling or the role oftentimes. How do you imitate Christ in the role that he's given you in marriage or in the church or wherever you happen to be? But we're talking about boys, and so I'm focusing mostly on them. But imitate God. And so there are a whole host of things, and I'll throw a few things out, but I'm not going to develop them. So you want them to be faithful, good, jealous, patient, loving, merciful, omnipotent within what God's given to them, okay? Omniscient within what God's given them. So that would fall under the sage, being wise. And you want them to be men of war, which God is, and that falls into the Savior idea. But whenever when you're in church, pay attention. When your pastor is talking to you about what God is like, and you really want to raise your kids well, or you really want to do well in the classroom, you need to start listening, and don't just say, well, these are attributes of God. It never connects. Remember that we're actively seeking to follow after him, to be like him. And so that should be the sorts of things that you want to see in your kids as you bring them up. So imitating God, second really important thing. And then the last, as you raise your sons, you should look to the scriptures and you should want your sons to be like the men in the Bible that God likes, right? That God's pleased with. And so you see men of faith in Hebrews 11, Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Moses, Joshua, Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and others. Those are the sorts of men that you should examine and say, what is it about these men that I want, that I can grab and say, that's what I want my son to be like. That's what I want my son to imitate as he imitates Christ. And just one that I will develop a little bit is a man after God's own heart, is David. Okay, we should want our sons to be like him as he is like Christ. And I think some of the striking things about David that oftentimes we don't get straight. We either get one of them or we get the other one. But David is a warrior poet, right? It's this really interesting dynamic where David is not a wimp when it comes to bravery and warrior type attributes, and at the same time he's kind of the quintessential poet songwriter of the Bible. And so when you look at David, that's one of the benchmarks that you should see is how can we, you know, there are a lot of people that can specialize and do one or the other of those things, but then they have real weaknesses on that other side. And for us, we should look at our sons and say, how can we raise him so that he's like David in those facets, so that he's a warrior poet? And I believe that in this day and age, you know, you try to think through, okay, well, how do I make my son a warrior? Does that mean jujitsu, or, you know, I mean, do we do karate, or, you know, these combat sports or whatever they are? And I think those are certainly lawful. But where do you find hard physical training, physical exertion and struggle, physical discipline, competition, winning and losing, physical pain, delayed gratification, teamwork, sweat, strategy, opportunities for leadership, moms that are worried, paramedic units standing by? In our day and age, I believe that a lot of healthy preparation for the warrior side of the equation can take place in athletics, in sports. I believe that if they're handled well, it is hard to find the same sort of opportunity to do things like reveal character in a young man. You know, because there are things I know in my own kids that come out in 5 minutes on the basketball court, and they haven't come out in 5 years in the classroom. Right? And as a coach, I know that I could spend 5 minutes and I could push a young man so hard that he'll hit the wall. Right, you can bring him until he's completely exhausted and figure out what his work ethic is like, and it doesn't take very long. It doesn't take too many double suicides until you see people come to the end of their rope. And in the classroom, it's just a different dynamic. It's healthy and it's balanced and it's important, and kids should be in the classroom and should be learning to be wise and study hard. But I believe for young men in particular, it is really difficult to establish a culture in the classroom like you just naturally have in athletics. Opportunities for leadership, opportunities for improving character, opportunities for revealing character, opportunities for teaching teamwork. And so I think that's very important. So as we, and this is something in classical Christian education that we don't all agree on, right? Chris Schlecht, in his talk earlier today, this athletics is one of those points where across the nation, there are some people that think, boy, it's just the most important thing. It really needs to be a part of your school, and others that think it just gets in the way. Right? It's something that's in the way of education, and we need to remove it. And so striking this balance, again, you need ballast. You can't just listen to a bunch of guys who love football and aren't interested in the classroom at all, or, you know, aren't interested in poetry, nor do you want to go to all the poets and ask them what they think about football. So somehow we've got to take our cues from the scriptures and say, how do we follow after Christ? How do we create this balanced young man that has these things incorporated together in the right place? And so these are some of the things that we're shooting for. All right, a few other things. You may have noticed that your outline was not terribly helpful up to this point. That's just an example of me being adventurous and taking dominion. But that first point on your outline, I will touch right now, which is immature masculinity. And so if you have in mind this goal, and a lot of it is that, you know, you've you've got this baby boy at home, or you've got these young men in your school, and you really need to know, what are we trying to do with them? What do we want them to be like at the end? And then you've got to work your way back and say, how do we get there from here? How are we going to accomplish that goal in the 18 years that we have to work with this little person? And this is an important thing. Oftentimes, moms in particular, young moms, their first child or first couple kids are boys, have a difficult time separating the wheat from the chaff. Okay, and what I mean by that is there are many times when a young man will exhibit one of these strengths that we've been talking about, and it's all wrapped up in foolishness, risk-taking that wasn't wise, maturity that's a year to a year and a half behind the girls, all sorts of these things. And what mom is looking at is the foolishness, and she wants to just drive that out of town in such a way that this little person never, ever thinks about doing that sort of thing again. And Tora, my wife, and I have talked about this before, and it's really interesting for me to have her to balance me out and the other way as well. Because there are some things that our boys do that I look at and I think, huh, that looks fun. And Tora's, she's covering her eyes, or she's saying, I just got to go inside. I just have to go inside and let you take care of this. It's the kids riding down the steep gravel driveway, no hands. And she knows what's going to happen, and she's right. Okay? But the rest of us just need to experience that once or twice. And being told isn't good enough every time. I mean, you've got to experience that pain to really learn the lesson sometimes. So we've seen that there. We've also seen this in how high you go in trees. My son Miles has this one tree. We call it Miles's tree, in the front left-hand corner of the property, and he's not big enough to reach the first branch, but the first branch comes down. It's a Norway spruce, and so he can grab the skinny part, and then he'll climb up the skinny part. It's the weirdest thing. You'd break it if an adult did it, but he can climb up the skinny part to get to the handle, and then he'll go up 35 or 40 feet in the tree and sit. And he just sits up there. And he's got a great view, I would imagine. I've never been up. But just being up in that tree makes my wife tremble. She sees him up there, and she just has to go inside. And it's the sort of thing where we have to balance each other out. And in a young man, you want to look at the whole bundle, right? And you want to say, okay, is there wheat in here that we don't want to throw out? There's chaff, right? Moms, you see the chaff. And so ask your husband, is there any wheat in this situation? And usually there is. Another example of this. I have a cousin who, a number of years ago, my parents took him to the park for his birthday, gave him this new pocket knife. It was nice. I think it was a Browning pocket knife or something. It was a nice pocket knife. And he was eighth grade, I think. And he was looking at the pocket knife, and they walked over toward a pond, and there were some ducks in the middle of the pond. And he looked at the ducks and looked at his pocket knife, opened the biggest knife, and in front of my parents, who had just given him the knife, threw the knife at the ducks in the middle of the pond. And my mom is standing there thinking, idiot, what kind of, you can see the pond is out there. And after it left his hand, he realized and he looked over at my parents with this look of, I'm not going to be able to get it back. And so you've got to ask yourself, is there any attribute in there where you can sit down and say, son, here's what I really appreciated about that. But you know, next time, you've really got to think before you do that sort of thing. You can't just throw it out there, because now that, you can tell that pocket knife is gone forever now. And he did. And so but it's important to sit down and not, you know, some things you don't want any more of that at all. But there are other things where you see bravery that's there, you see this adventuresome attitude, and you think, I want him to have that certain masculine quality. And I want to preserve that, but I want him to grow in wisdom. And so we're going to work on the chaff and save the wheat. Okay. Understanding compliments is next. And I talked a little bit at the beginning about single-sex schools. First of all, the scriptures neither prohibit nor require single-sex education. Okay, it's the same for co-education. It is allowable. That's certainly the case. You shouldn't be out of fellowship with your brother or sister who has a different opinion on that than you. I think there are certainly areas where it's the wise thing to do. So in other words, boys and girls PE, we have junior high PE for our boys and girls. I think they should be separate. I think there are certain modesty issues that are different. And there are times when the wisest thing to do is to separate those kids. But, you know, there are many, many people, their reason for wanting to separate the boys and the girls is anecdotal. And it goes back to when I was in high school, you know, there's a dad talking. When I was in high school, I just know that the girls were a major distraction to me and to my friends. And I'd like to not have that distraction for my sons. And you can appreciate that. And I think that's the sort of thing that's good to weigh and think through. It's also important that he's comparing apples to apples and that he knows what your high school is like, right? Our assumption is that it's like it was when I was in high school, okay? And that's not always the case. There are many times where we're trying to establish a culture that is different than what we were used to. And we've got a lot of good reasons to do that. But it's important that if you establish that culture that's different, that you make sure you're comparing the same sorts of things when you make that decision. So it's certainly allowable. And I've given reasons for why I like what we're doing right now. Let's talk just for a moment about whether schools and homes are rigged against boys. First of all, I believe that if it's the boys that are claiming the schools or the homes are rigged against them, that they just need to be told that they're being sissies and they need to grow up. And that's with the acknowledgement that there certainly are homes that are not balanced and healthy the way they should be. I realize that. There certainly are schools that are not balanced and healthy. But to be honest with you, at Logos for the past 14 years, we've not seen the stereotypical sex divisions that are reported in all sorts of studies, as far as boys excelling in mathematics and girls not excelling in mathematics, as far as girls being ahead in reading and writing and boys being behind in reading and writing. We're not seeing these sorts of things in our schools. And so if you have a young man that's claiming that the system is rigged against him, that oftentimes there's a real lack of responsibility that he's taking in his work. Or it could be parents looking for excuses. And I think the number one priority for young men and for parents of young men is to teach them to accept responsibility. Certainly, if you're in a school and there is honest-to-goodness discrimination against the boys, and it's very clear, then you should think about whether that's the right place for your son to be. But I believe, by and large, in the majority of classical Christian schools, the schools are not designed in such a way that boys can't succeed. And boys who aren't succeeding, parents need to work with them to see what it is that's going on. Ways that schools or homes could be rigged against boys, since I've made that strong statement, if a school does not have balance, or a home does not have balance, and what I mean by that is a school, if you have all ladies on staff and a lady administrator, and let's say none of them have kids yet, right? So these gals straight out of college, and they're running the school and setting the standards and don't have input from men or don't have input from godly Christian women who have been around the block once or twice and raised their own sons and seen what we're expecting, I think there could be a real imbalance. And so as a staff, you want to ask yourself, do we have balance? Here's how it could come out. If you have we have a Knights Award, the Knights Award, which is it's basically outstanding Christian example. That's what it comes down to. And if you have a really easy time coming up with a couple girls to receive that award from each class, but you just can't find any boys to receive it, you might look and ask yourself, what are our standards? What sort of young men do we think should be imitated here at the school? And oftentimes, the young men who are leaders, who take initiative, who take risks and so forth, that are going to make the biggest dent in the culture when they graduate from your school, will not receive the Outstanding Example Award. And part of it might be that the ladies in the elementary are giving the award to the girls, and they're giving the award to the boys who act like girls, right? And that would be a real example of imbalance, okay? And so some of that just, you know, as an administrator, that's something that we talk about at the end of every year. We'll say, look, I don't want any sissies getting the Knights Award. I said that this past year to my staff members. I don't want any young men who act like girls to receive that Knights Award just because they don't get their name on the board. We want guys who love God and who are masculine to the core and who will go out and make a difference for the kingdom of God. And if they have a little rough edge here or there, but they've responded well, they're teachable, and they've made a lot of progress under your instruction and your discipline, they could qualify. Okay, that's the sort of guy that we would consider giving the award to. And so you want to seek for that kind of balance. If a husband and a wife do not communicate and balance each other out, and mom is responsible for bringing up young men in her house and dad's checked out, is there a chance that she could be imbalanced? Yes, absolutely. And so that's a situation where you might want to look at it and say, okay, how can dad become more involved to provide that sort of balance? But I don't believe that just because there are desks and papers and pencils and you have to sit and pay attention and work hard, that that's rigged against young men. What that is hard work. And young men tend to have this disease sometimes where if it's hard, there must be some kind of prejudice against me instead of the fact that I just need to quit whining and get right to work. So I don't believe that there's an inherent difference right there. And then just very quickly, leadership versus separatism. Young men, in order to be leaders, at least in principle, there has to be someone who would be willing to follow them, right? You could have a young man who's on the right track and seemingly going the right direction, but if the people around him, and I think peers are a really good measure of this, if his peers would never want to follow him, if he'd be the last person they'd want to follow, then he's not growing into a leader, right? There are some guys who are great leaders and they're going the wrong direction, okay? And you don't want people following them, but they're leaders. There are some kids that look like they're going the right direction, but boy, they're the last kid in the class anybody would want to ever follow. And that's a very important thing. I think some of these attributes that we've talked about help take care of that. But you want to consider, is my son the sort of kid that others see as living the good life, or do they see him as uptight, you know, kind of doing the cross sign because he because somebody saw a PG-13 movie, you know, and he's in eighth grade and he just can't believe it. And you know, that definition of godly masculinity is the sort of thing that you don't want any young man following. And so it's important to consider, is he that warrior poet that we talked about that establishes that balance that you want other young men to follow. All right. Well, thank you very much.